Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. America is becoming statistically less Christian as more and more people don't attend church or say they don't identify with any one particular denomination or religion. But what does that look like in South Dakota? SDPB continues our Future of Faith conversations today with Dempsey Tapley. He's the creator and host of the digital interview series called Eternal Confidence, and he's joining me here in the Kirby Family Studio inside SDPB's Sioux Falls studio. Dempsey, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm really excited.
What a fabulous program. So you basically put a camera on someone and ask them these really difficult questions about faith and meaning and church and their background and their fears and their hopes. And tell us a little bit about where this idea came from.
Yeah. So I have my bachelor's is in elementary education. And so I have kind of a love for learning and a love for being inquisitive. And also, I think that in these situations where you want to be academic and you want to be very thoughtful, I think it's really important to be affectionate and empathetic as well. And so this came out of kind of my desire to explore this in a really affectionate way, why people are leaving the church and why people stay at the church and why people believe what they believe, and specifically how that can cause conflict in people's personal lives when you grow up believing one thing and then you hit like your early 20s, late teens, and you switch beliefs, and that can cause real conflict in family dynamics and in other personal relationships. And so that's what I really wanted to explore. The series itself is an interview series, and it's structured in a way to mitigate my own bias. And so the series itself really holds no view correct or incorrect. It's really all about kind of giving people space to essentially monologue about their own beliefs. And then I put people in the same video that disagree with each other. They don't talk to each other. It's these monologues, but that disagree with each other, and hopefully to give like a non-monolithic view of these issues. Like, this is why I left the church. This is why my faith's really important to me.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you're intentionally trying to take yourself kind of out of the conversation. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering what some of these questions, like what are the questions that you're asking that really resonate with you?
So I think the questions that really resonate...
Because I'm not going to let you get out of here without telling a little bit of your own faith story.
So I think the questions that really resonate with me are questions that pick at people's insecurities and what they believe. Mm-hmm. I think that's where a lot of the most interesting content in the series comes from, is when people are able to recognize the fact that they don't have all the answers, or that what they say out loud might not be attractive, but it's what they believe anyways. Mm. And so those are the questions I really love. And it gives people a chance to be introspective, and it gives people a chance to understand why people might disagree with them. And that can kind of help us be more understanding when it comes to like, why have you made this decision to believe a certain thing? And then if we kind of come to understand, like, I have the personal belief that I think everyone believes crazy things. If you put it in a certain light, everyone beliefs are crazy. And so, questions that cause people to really look at their own angst and insecurity and what they believe. Those are the questions that are most interesting to me.
Do you come from a faith tradition that or a family tradition, a secular tradition that encouraged your curiosity? Like, where does your sort of curiosity come from? Was it because of your faith tradition or in spite of it?
I think it was because of my training as an educator, more than anything. I think my own faith journey, it was really defined by affection and intentional loving on people. Like the church that I went to and my youth pastors growing up, they were all incredibly loving people that went intentionally out of their way to make the world a better place. So that was my experience with faith growing up. I went to a very small high school. My graduating class size was 13. It was in rural Nebraska. Our school district was 60 miles wide. And so within that, there's just not, just because there's such a little bit of people, there's just a not a lot of diversity in anything, just because there's only 13 kids in your class. There's just not a lot of room for that. And so when I moved to Sioux Falls to go to college, hearing not only how people's views in generals were really diverse, but how Christianity itself can be non-monolithic. I grew up with this idea that Christianity is very monolithic and every Christian believes the same thing. And it's not until I started asking really detailed, nuanced questions that I really understood how varied Christian belief was, and yet how adamant and important faith was to people, even people who were Christians and believed different things and different things in nuance and different things in the tediousness of what belief entails. So I don't know if that answers.
I want to go back to something that you said there, and that, you know, you have this sense, and this first clip we're going to play is from a gentleman named Xavier, who is having the moment that I think you've had, and maybe anybody who's been in a faith family or a worship, you know, place before, where they hear something in the church and they sort of make this assumption that that's truth, or that that's what everybody in the room believes, and then you find out later that other people are having some issues with this. So let's hear what Xavier has to say.
I think the main one is, a very divisive one, is our LGBTQ community and, you know, the acceptance of them in certain faiths and stuff like that. But then there are so many other things. Like, I remember I went to a mass once, and the homily was about conception. And, like, you know, being married, and the whole point of being married in the Catholic Church is so you can procreate and have children. That's why you get married, is to have children. And that was one thing for me. I was like sitting in the crowd, I'm like, in my head, I'm like, nope. Like, I totally disagree with this guy. But he went on to say that if you're a married couple and you can't have kids, but you really want kids, and so you have, like, in vitro fertilization. Essentially what it boiled down to was, like, this kid was not made, like, in the traditional way that God had intended. So therefore they were not an abomination, but not really worthy of, like, the Holy Spirit. And that was like, I remember people looking around like, what is this guy talking about? And some were kind of like, you know, well, you know, he's the priest. I'm not a priest. I didn't do my studying. So, and I'm just like, no way. Like, I wouldn't be surprised, and, like, nobody got up and left. Like, I can't even imagine. Like, I have friends who tried so hard to have a baby, and things just weren't working for them. They are the most down to earth, loving people I may have, like, ever, I may have ever encountered in my life, and they wanted a baby. They wanted to love a baby. They wanted to have a child. They wanted to have a family. And the only way that would work for them was through those in vitro fertilization. They had to do, like, the fertility shots and all this stuff. And now they have this amazing, beautiful little baby and an incredible family. The fact that there's somebody out there in a church telling, like, if my friends had heard that message, I don't know what I would have done. So again, limiting. It's become exclusive, I think. People are feeling excluded, and that's why people are leaving.
And that's a clip from the digital interview series, Eternal Confidence. Dempsey Tapley is the creator of that series. You can find it on YouTube, and we'll put a link up on our website after the program as well, so people can find that. The full, you know, sort of all these interviews kind of put together, these vignettes as you've woven them together. And he really gets at that moment to a couple things that I think are fascinating to sort of talk about. One of them is, at one minute, it's kind of academic. It's, you know, it's dogma. It's, you know, this is what I heard. And then there's that moment where he says, I know somebody. And then he has to stop because the emotion of their story halts him in his tracks. He has to kind of regroup and then say, I know somebody that this would impact deeply. Did you find that as a theme that a lot of people would not only talk about, you know, here's a problem that I have, or here's something that I love about the church, something that I dislike about the church, my church. And then when it applied to them, it was transformative or it was alienating, depending upon, was that sort of thematic for some of these conversations?
Yeah, I think people are really, religion is a very personal thing. And there's aspects of religion that people take very seriously, and when applied very seriously, that emotional element kind of grows as you think and understand certain things. So I think with that interview about conception and knowing people who this theology that this pastor was saying would affect, I think that's a beautiful moment where, regardless of what anyone's opinions on and what anyone in that situation believes or what their assumption that, like, this person's correct or not, like, regardless of correctness, I think Xavier's response out of affection and out of empathy and understanding how this theology affects people, is really emblematic of how people navigate religion and why people kind of take the stances they do on religion.
Yeah. I want to hear next from Elizabeth. And you asked a question, which is, are your beliefs under attack in America? And this is kind of an interesting answer, because some people who are non-Christians might say this, who are Muslim or who are Jewish can come up with some very specific examples. Some people who are Christian come up with very specific examples. And here's Elizabeth's answer to, are your beliefs under attack in America?
As a Christian who reads the Bible, my belief set is contrary to culture, and I think it is in a lot of ways an enemy to culture, and so our mainstream culture. And so the idea of being under attack, I think as a Christian you have to expect that people are not going to agree with you, and that they're not going to agree with the ideas and the value sets that you have, because that's a part of being a Christian. That's like the default area you dwell in, is to be going against the current. And so I would say, if your ideas are not being attacked and you're a Christian, you might be going with the flow a little too much. So yes, we're being attacked, but it's great.
But it's great. Talk a little bit about this notion of what you hear from your guests about being counterculture, because later on we're going to hear somebody who says, hey, you know, walking away from the church is very counterculture. It's everywhere. It's just, it infuses everything that we do. And she's saying, hey, if you're a follower of the faith and you're really doing your work as a follower of that faith, you're going to get attacked.
So I'm going to say something, I'm saying out of my experience making this interview series. So less like an intuitive thing, but more like, this is what I've experienced interviewing these people. In general, I think people like to, and this is going to sound condescending, and I don't mean it to. In general, people like to give themselves an underdog story. Kind of everyone feels like in some way or another they're under attack for their beliefs. And I think that there's a couple reasons that I've kind of talked to people about as I've doing this series, and it's because obviously people who care about this stuff are vocal, and people, I think there's like the idea that the ideas that we get from this don't necessarily come from the most people, but just from the loudest people, and so people that are loud and aggressive kind of give everyone else a bad name, like regarding their religious beliefs or whatever. But I also think that people who have insecurities about what they believe themselves don't know how to respond to criticism, or don't know how to feel comfortable in a conversation about their beliefs. And so rather than being introspective, and rather than kind of working through that self-analysis, sometimes it's easier to say that that the culture at large is attacking me, rather than understanding, oh, this is why people would find this hard to believe, or this is why people don't find my belief system attractive. And that goes for both people who are Christians and people who are non-Christians. Kind of understanding, normally people who are, that I've experienced, people who really value self-analysis feel less attacked because they can understand why people would have a problem with what they believe, if that makes sense.
Yeah. The series is called Eternal Confidence. You can find it on YouTube. We're talking with Dempsey Tapley. We're going to take a break and come back with more with Dempsey on the other side of this break. You're on listener-supported SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We are broadcasting today from SDPB Sioux Falls Studio, and Dempsey Tapley is with us. He is the creator of a digital interview series called Eternal Confidence, and we brought him into the studio as part of our Future of Faith conversations here on In the Moment and on SDPB, with some highlights from some of these interviews that he's done. And I want to stay, Dempsey, on this question about beliefs being under attack. And hear a little bit from Robert, because we heard from Elizabeth beforehand, who was a Christian, and said, you know, her beliefs are sort of under attack. And you mentioned this kind of underdog philosophy. So here is Robert's thoughts.
It's a time where science and critical thinking are very much frowned upon. People tend to make decisions based on emotion or whatever tribe they belong to, whatever political or religious affiliation that they happen to have, whatever ideology they believe in. And so the idea of somebody who puts all that aside and looks at things from a scientific standpoint is definitely not predominant in our society. And as somebody who very much believes in the scientific method and believes in using logic to come to decisions, you're definitely going to run up against a lot of opposition to that. It's way easier to just buy into an ideology and have that decide what you believe than to think for yourself and to come to your own conclusions.
I want to get at this idea of asking some of these hard questions and creating a space where people can talk about it. That's something we try to do every day on this program. We're doing it on live radio. You're going into people's living rooms and you know, sort of there's a vignette of their lives behind them as well. How do you create that space that feels safe and that feels like a hospitable space when someone agrees to an interview?
I thank you so much for mentioning that it's in people's living rooms, because that's something I intentionally do, and it's really good to get that noticed. The idea is that so first of all, the fact that Eternal Confidence is in no way interested in correctness, like the series itself and me, when I speak as the series creators, I have no beliefs. Obviously, as an individual, like a human being, I have beliefs. But when I'm speaking for Eternal Confidence, and that series itself is not interested in correctness at all. And I think that allows people to be comfortable from opposing viewpoints and from kind of all opinions on it, because they're not worried about me being antagonistic, and they're not worried that I'm going to use them to make a point of some kind. I have no investment in making a caricature of people. That's not my goal at all. I'm very interested in being, in understanding these human beings, as really complicated, nuanced, inconsistent people, and allowing, and to explore that on their terms. Every one of my subjects gets the questions beforehand, and these interviews are not conversational at all. Because if it was conversational, my own like subconscious bias, I would steer the conversation in a way that supports my own preconceived beliefs. And so I give my subjects a PDF with the questions, and I ask them nothing on the interview except what those questions are. And that's to give them as much agency as possible to kind of tell their story on their terms. And so giving people like this is their story to tell, and you get to tell it how you want to tell it, and it's in your space where you feel comfortable. I think that, I just think people find an opportunity like that very attractive.
What has the response been, not only from the people who have sat and been generous with their time with you, but from people who have watched their stories? Because there is a certain amount of vulnerability or exposure or, you know, an openness about people willing to tell their story, not only to you, but then, you know, to the rest of the world.
Yeah. I think one of the things that's really exciting as a creator is getting to meet and talk to people who don't completely understand what you're doing. And so I've had a little bit, which I think is more interesting. So some people get caught up on the fact that I'm not interested in making a point. It's something that people have asked me, like, well, like, is this going to end up with you, like, making some grand statement about belief or whatever? And that's not my intention at all. And so that response has been kind of the most interesting, is people expecting it to be a build up to like, oh, but you're going to share your beliefs at some point. You're going to say that this person's right or wrong. And that's not, my job is not to commentate on these people's beliefs at all. I think a lot of people find it attracted, like this opportunity to be a part of these conversations, whether on the internet or we also do live events where people can kind of conversate about these things, to conversate in kind of like neutral territory. And so it's different than going to a religious institution or going to an institution that's decisively non-religious and kind of not feeling represented there, not feeling like the person in power has your best interest in mind or whatever it is, or has a respect for your beliefs, or, you know, the assumption is that we'll let you talk, but you're wrong. This is like, we'll let you talk and then people can decide. And I think, I think people crave, nuance more than, what the media gives them. Because it's media is like conflict, and there's not like things get really tedious when you get nuanced, and that conflict becomes kind of loss. And I think people really crave that. This is these aren't just caricatures, and I'm not interacting with like, you know, someone who's just interested in stirring people up.
Yeah. And you're also really effective at getting through the way you have set these things up, these really powerful stories. And I want to share one of these stories from a man you interviewed named Joshua, who really talks about the question that you asked him was, why leave religion? And here's Joshua telling his story.
It was easier for me at that point to tell myself that God doesn't exist as opposed to God doesn't love me. It was a lot easier to process that this entity that is so powerful and loving and humanizing and good and great didn't love me. I really solidified my atheism when I went through a divorce. If God loved me, if God cared about me, if God was real, he was going to fix my marriage, and it didn't happen. And so when I met my now wife, when we were still dating, she was a good Baptist girl and she was a believer, and we were talking about it one time, and I said, you know, what if I told you that God wasn't real? And she said, well, I'll tell you all the good things that God has done in your life. And I mean, we kind of went down this dark path that I didn't want to lead her down. And I didn't want her to experience the same pain that I had felt in coming to the realization that God doesn't exist or God doesn't love me. The struggle with all of that was, deep down, I really knew that God existed. I mean, in every core being, I knew that God was real. I just didn't want to admit it or accept it. But she came to me one night and she says, I don't know if that I can marry someone who's not a Christian, who's a non-believer. And so once again, like, God had completely rocked and ruined my life. And I was like, seriously, I was really, really upset and angry with God, because I was like, here, he's taking the girl of my dreams away and it's all his fault. He's going to ruin everything. So I was left with a decision if I should convince her that God's not real and take her down the same painful path that I had been going down for 10 years. The other alternative was just to convince her that God doesn't love me, that there's no possible way that her God of existence doesn't love me, which just seemed easier. And so the only way I was going to prove this to her was by going into her book, the Bible, and finding the passage that says, see, it says right here that God doesn't love people like me. And of course, every night I'd open the Bible, or every morning I'd open, and she didn't know I was doing this either. I was going to come to her with the proof. And every night and every morning and every lunch hour that I would open that book and try and find the passage, I would just bawl. I would just be crying and so broken and opened up because I couldn't find it. And every time it was just, here's all the reasons God loves you. Here's all the reasons God accepts you. It doesn't matter what you've done. If you just believe in Jesus and you ask for forgiveness and do all these things, and just like, God loves you all the time. Even where I was in that moment, God loved me, and that's what he was showing me. And so 2 weeks went by of this, and I approached her and I said, will you help me understand how to accept God into my heart and accept Jesus into who I am, and I can truly, actually, really be saved? And so we sat there and we cried and we prayed and we wrote in my Bible. It was February 12th, the day that I got saved. And we told her family about it the next day. It was this big dramatic thing. And I've been a Christian, a believer, and loved by God ever since.
That's an excerpt from Eternal Confidence. The interview was with a man named Joshua. Dempsey Tapley is here with us. You mentioned something earlier that has happened to me as we started this Future of Faith conversation, and that people are coming to me and saying, you're not going to tell me that faith is dead, are you? Or I don't want to end, if this project is about saying that there's no more Christianity, for example, or there's, you know, I don't want to hear it. And it was interesting to me as well. I think you had the same experience where you thought, why why would I start out with the purpose of that in the first place? But also this fear that people have, this sort of visceral moment when you ask them about faith or say, I want to ask these real questions, of being afraid of being seen and of being judged. What do we do with that? Because that's you're doing it, I'm doing the Future of Faith stuff. It matters in a way, it sort of matters in a way that maybe I didn't realize when we first began. Has that been your experience too?
Yeah, I think there's not a lot that's more personal to people and more important to people than their religious beliefs, whether that's religious beliefs or lack of religious beliefs. That kind of helps people build their like idea of who they are as human beings. I think one of the things that makes, so there's an emphasis in this series on people leaving the church and how that impacts family dynamics. And I think one reason that is because specifically people of faith, that's where they find a lot of their personal identity, a lot of their values. And so when you are growing up in that community and then you reject that community, you're rejecting a big part of who that person is. And so that feels like a personal rejection when people leave that faith community. I think that visceral, emotional, raw reaction to my faith might be under attack, or my faith might be made fun of, or it might be illegitimized, or it might be spoken to condescending about my faith. A lot of those fears just come from the fact that it's just, I don't want someone to speak condescending to me as a person, and my faith is kind of the closest thing that, or not my personal faith, I'm not saying I believe anything, but like, but like the thinking is that this is the kind of the closest thing that defines me as a person. And so I think when you kind of go out of your way to be like, I want to talk about this, but I also value you as a person, and I think your stories are really important. And I think regardless of if I'm a Christian or not, hearing how it impacted you and your wife's life, like that's just a really beautiful moment that even if I don't believe the same as you, I could acknowledge that, that's a powerful emotional experience for you. And so just being willing to legitimize people's personal experiences as important to them, I think is a really big step in people feeling more comfortable about talking about these things.
You've made very clear that this is not about your beliefs or you being in front of the camera at any point, but I can't help but wonder if once you hear all these people and the generosity of what they're willing to tell in their stories, that at some point you start feeling, even if you don't publish it, that you want to answer these questions on camera for yourself. Do you feel like at some point these other people are helping you have a voice too?
Yeah, I wish these were questions that someone asked me, I guess. these are questions that I feel a personal connection to. As far as like, is there a version of this where I answer these questions or I'm more invested in like exploring this? Yes, that version of it exists in a parallel universe in another version of this. That all that interests me. But
we'll stay tuned for that, because I have a feeling that at some point after listening to so many stories, it can't help but change you a little bit and affect how you use your own voice in the world. Dempsey Tapley, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate your time. The conversations are called Eternal Confidence. You can find them on YouTube, and we'll put some links up on our website as well. Thanks.
Thank you.